downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, you guys. Happy, no, I'm not saying that anymore. I'm over it. We're in it. We're doing it. We're here. We're here now. Be in the moment. I did see something really good this morning before I left. I saw new people being sworn in into the House of Representatives, and it was freaking awesome. It was so great. They had Muslims. They had women. They had people of all different colors. They had people. They even have like Native Americans now. There's two Native Americans. I think this country is moving forward, and I think that we are going to have a good reaction from the shit we all had to put up with last year. And if you know what I'm saying, and I know you do, so I'm just going to keep going here. But anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I have an incredible artist for you today, Natalie White, who is really, really complicated. And I'm going to try and work this out, but I work this out with her between her feelings, between my feelings about myself and like her entire life. You're going to have to work with me here, folks. I hope I don't get thrown off because I was away last week. I was in Asbury Park, New Jersey, listening to a Grateful Dead cover band. But right on. Okay, so Patty Fabricant, if you are out there, we are going to get this job done. The job done is letting you know, all of you out there, that I am going to be performing at the Front Room Gallery this coming Sunday, January 6th, between 3 and 4 p.m. So the curator, Patricia Fabricant, who is a fabulous artist on her own, curated this exhibition where she took five pairs of studio partners, people that share the studio, and showed their work together. And I am going to psychoanalyze each of these studio couples, and hopefully I won't like ruin any of their relationships, and they will still continue to make art. I have no doubt after I dig into their heads. Patricia was maybe going to call in, but let me just mention the artists and then we can move on. Okay. If Patricia's not going to call in. Because she's busy. She's curating a show. She just curated the show, and she has to get ready for all the stuff that's happening on it this weekend. So it's Thomas Broadbent, Janice Caswell, Patricia Fabricant, Alex Gingro, Jesse Henson, Amy Hill, Christopher Lowry Johnson, Mark Masayaga, Kelly Parr, and Wendy Small. And after I'm done at 4, there'll be free drinks till 6. And you can still see the art, which is really, I mean, I've been down there. It's a really good show. So anyway, come to that. Okay, so let me explain to you who Natalie White is. I'm just going to do this, see if I can do this really quickly. Natalie, what do you think?
I think you can do it. Yeah. It would be a very complicated thing for even me to do, so go for
it. Thank you, Natalie. See, I feel really encouraged by Natalie. There's something about you, Natalie. You know, you look a little like Renee Zellweger, I got to tell you.
Oh, thank you so much.
In the best way possible.
Thank you.
Have you heard that before?
No, but I'll take it.
You know, I just saw that movie yesterday. You're much smarter. I don't even like comparing you because that movie was so dumb. But I actually don't usually. I got sucked into it. Bridget Jones Has a Baby. It's the worst piece of crap.
Ooh, ever. I haven't seen that one.
It's really bad. Really bad. Very anti-feminist women. Woman, it's not good for women. It's
you got to meet the world where it is. It's not total, where you want it to be.
Yeah. Well, you're right about that. It's a total fairy tale. So let's see if I can do this really quick. Okay. I know Natalie a bit. Mostly I know her through our mutual friends who she has had the honor of posing for. And she grew up in West Virginia in a poor,
yes.
Poor, like just it sounds like the stereotype. Her parents were both
Free Methodists, Sunday school teachers Sunday in the Free Methodist teachers. Church. And our house cost $20,000 for my parents to buy it.
So it seems to me like she had kind of a independent thinking streak and left around when she was age 17 and moved to New York, which is really ballsy, especially nowadays. Like, that was only, I don't know, if you know, I mean, that was post Madonna. That sounds like Madonna, actually. That's what it's making me think of. Anyway, she wound up meeting a lot of very famous artists, people like Spencer Tunick, Will Cotton, Sean Lennon, George Kondo, who wound up making, well, I mean, this is an example of how famous the people were. George Kondo, who she wound up dating for a while, wound up making this painting of her. He's a very famous artist. If you don't know his name, you should look it up. His work is excellent. And he wound up selling the painting of her for $5 million. He didn't sell it. It was sold at auction, right?
How much money
do you think he got out of that?
I think that he probably sold it to whoever sold it at Christie's and got $5.2 million for it.
Yeah, but you think he probably sold it for what?
Probably six figures. 700.
Yeah, like $700,000. Yeah. Did you get paid for the painting?
No.
And he showed it to your parents, right?
Yeah, that was really... George is such a great, fun, wonderful person.
Are you guys still friends?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely.
So, your parents?
So, my father, stepmother, and sister came up to the studio to visit us. They came in from West Virginia. My sister's was already here in New York. And, we made them dinner in the studio. And then George pulled out the paintings of me because he couldn't wait to show them to my parents. And he's so wonderfully and genuinely wonderfully oblivious that he didn't really think about the fact that, okay, here is my boyfriend showing a painting of me with my boob on it to my father.
Yeah. That's the kind of guys these artists are.
He didn't think, George didn't think of it that way. And, because he didn't think of it that way, neither did my father really, but except.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. So so you get what I'm saying, folks, about like, so she wound up posing for a lot of men, being their muse, really, because Natalie is smart and like totally outspoken, so you know that her personality could not help but influence his work, whatever work she was involved in, which is I think why, because like I was saying to her before, there's a million beautiful young women that come to New York, and very few of them wind up being muses to all these famous artists.
Yeah, John Perry Barlow, I think, put it the right way when he said about me that the reason why he started talking to me isn't the reason why he kept talking to me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Natalie, in this interview by the wonderful Joe Heaps Nelson,
yeah,
who we all hold in
Joe.
High esteem and miss. He passed, was that last year?
Yeah.
Way too soon. But anyway, he did a great interview with Natalie. He also did a great painting of Natalie, and I got this quote from Natalie from that interview. It says, "Every beautiful woman should just bask in the glory of what she has. Humility is for when you're dead."
Right.
Which I love.
Right. It's about, because, you know, people need to accept and be joyous of the gifts that they're given. And, you know, we need to stop being told that we shouldn't use what we have to be happy. And if what we look like makes us happy, we should bask in the glory of that.
Well, we should.
Of the gifts that we're given.
And also just to take pride in. So you have. So here's the thing. We were trying to work all this out. So we were saying that you have a really positive feeling and are really good at making people comfortable. And I think like your positive feeling, do you think, I mean, I think every woman should feel like that about her body, right? Or
Completely. Yeah. And also, you know, it doesn't mean that you should ignore other things that make you great as well and also bask in the glory of that, too. You know, I think that people should be happier about what they do and the gifts that they're given and, you know, why not celebrate it?
So anyway,
everyone should take a few minutes a day to celebrate themselves.
There you go. Gratitude. We were talking about that, too, how important that is. So I want to just finish up the summary of Natalie so we can get in this conversation. So Natalie had a lot of solo shows, a lot of great work. She's performed naked. She's had a lot of big shows. Do the research, okay? It's Wikipedia. I'm not going to bore you with details here. This is not what this is about. But anyway, she's a very well-respected artist who had the balls to move to New York and make her own way at age 17. And then after being a muse for a while, she wound up making her own work, which is really fabulous. She works, one of the few people that works with a certain format of a huge format Polaroid camera. There's only like six in the world. Andy Warhol used one. And after making her own work for a while, she found out a lot about women's rights and wound up doing a lot of work around women's rights. She walked 250 miles from New York to Washington, D.C. That was two years ago, 17, and then you tagged.
It was 2016, before the presidential election.
And then you tagged, you spray painted ERA Now on the Capitol building, which you got arrested for, and they made you pay $50, and you're okay with that now.
Right? I actually represented myself at court, and I went all Abby Hoffman style.
So great.
Yeah.
And here's another great, great quote about Natalie that from Spencer Tunick that I took out of that great interview. It says, Spencer Tunick says, if I could bottle Natalie's personality and sprinkle it over Manhattan, we would have a truly naked city. You love that? We love that.
I love Spencer.
Okay, so here's the conversation that I don't even have straightened out in my head, but I know Natalie, I'm a little intimidated, Natalie. I'm going to say I'm a little nervous.
No, intimidated by what?
A little bit.
Don't.
I'm going to say a little bit because let me explain to you what I think this conversation should be about.
Okay.
And then I'll see if I'm embarrassing myself. Okay. So here's an issue. I actually want you to help me work out an issue, I think.
Okay.
Here's an issue I have, okay, about sexual currency and about young, sexy women owning their sexuality. Because it seems like there's two sides of it. And one side is that women should all feel good about their sexuality and own their sexuality and all that and just, you know, be good with it. And then there's this other side of me that's curious about women that use their sexuality to get things. And I don't see you that way at all. I see you as this is why I want to have this conversation with you, because I genuinely believe you are a giving person, that you give more than
completely,
you get back.
Completely.
I know that. So this is where I am starting. I'm not right about everything, but I have pretty good instincts. And a lot of people think I am right about a lot of things. So I'm starting from this place. Now, my own issues are, I mean, I want this to be about you. I'm going to be asking you questions, but just so that we all know where I'm starting from, the counter transference that I have. Okay, so I'm probably more than twice. I'm 62. I mean, I don't hide that. So I'm like twice as old as you are or whatever, or more or whatever. I'm old. Okay. So it's really funny. Like, I feel like being older, I feel actually better about my physical appearance now. I think I look better as an old lady than I did as a young woman. As a young woman, I felt like kind of, I didn't have a good body. I felt like kind of overweight and not attractive because you're surrounded by beautiful young women. But now at my age, I'm much more comfortable in how I look. But I also don't think that I ever partly because of my upbringing and all that shit, but I never really used my sexuality even when I could have. So there's part of me that worries that maybe I resent women who are capable of using their sexuality. I don't know. I hope not. I'm embarrassed about that, but I'm putting that out there. So you'll know and everybody else will know. So that's a possibility, but I want to get into you know, examples and details, but what I think I'm really curious about from you, which, you know, hopefully we can sort of work through some of this, that you seem to be able to have both, in the sense that I don't feel like you're competitive about your sexuality, or that you're trying to get over on it, that you're trying to get people to do things for you because you're pretty and sexy and willing to be sexy. But at the same time, you do get advantages because of that. So, but I'm wondering if you see it that way or whatever. You know, do you know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, so I don't think that I necessarily get advantages by being sexy, because there's 1,000 girls out there in New York City, right, or more that are sexy. So obviously, you know, I'm using my brain for some of it.
So no, but it is truly your personality.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that I'm highly aware of the way that I affect people and the way that they affect me. And I always knew that sexuality could be used as a weapon. I knew that from a very young age. I had seen it be used by other people. And I wanted to make sure that I didn't use my body and sexuality as a weapon. And because there's certain ways that you can use your sexuality as a woman that can be very hurtful to people. And I think you need to be aware of that. So I don't want to hurt people, therefore I don't want to, you know, use my sexuality to gain things that I wouldn't get without it.
Interesting. So do you think that, I mean, that's why I'm assuming, I mean, it's why these artists trust, it's not a matter of trust. I think that these artists that work with you and the work that you've made and you know, the work is, I mean, it's all part of your ability to, your particular ability that you have, that I think transcends your physical being or whatever that is, where there's a sense of trust and community that you are able to establish with other people. Isn't that part of it?
Right, completely. You know, when I walk into a room with an artist and they throw out an idea and I don't think that it's a good idea, I'll say it. It doesn't matter who they are. And also, you know, I'll try things that sound ridiculous, like one time with Michael Dweck in Miami, it was in New York. There was freezing cold water that I had to jump into as a part of this photo shoot. And I knew that the images would come out amazing, so I did it anyway. And you know, when I was when we were shooting me topless and just a skin colored thong on top of the Wall Street Bull, it was freezing, but I knew that those images would be iconic because of the way that we set out to do it. So I'm willing to do things that most people aren't on the fly of the moment, because I'm willing to go to the next level to get.
But I'm also thinking that maybe your comfort, and I don't even call it confidence. I think it's like kind of just a, you know, a quiet confidence is such a weird word in this, with sex and confidence together. But it's not like, it's not a defensiveness. It's not, and it's not a show offiness. It's just a very natural, comfortable in your skinness and your personality, which is big enough to communicate that. So I think that's a lot of what, why people are comfortable.
And it's just really all about being goofy at the end of the day and, you know, having a great time and, you know, not like looking at the watch and being like, oh, I'm 5 minutes over.
Or you don't take yourself too seriously.
No, not at all.
And you don't expect them, I mean, you don't expect them to be treating you as a sex object. Is that right? Or how? What's that about? Because I've been naked in public, too, a couple of times, but as like, I'm great. I'm fine about being naked now that I'm old, because I don't feel like I'm challenging anybody about my sexuality.
So,
so how do you navigate that?
So it's really easy to kind of break down that barrier of, you know, somebody might be intimidated or scared within, you know, the first 10 seconds of me being, you know, in a room with them naked. Pretty soon, like after I'd say about 30 seconds, every single time it's been, that wall's been broken down.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just about the tension that you have and the lack of anxiety and the complete calmness and mm-hmm. goofiness. And, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as, as a woman, I had all of the power. As a naked woman, you have all of the power. Mm. You can either be sexual because you're told that you were supposed to be sexual if mm-hmm. you're a naked woman, mm-hmm. or you could be completely calm and it completely be a great experience for everyone mm-hmm. in the room.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, when you think about, like, what you see on, you know, in the media, you think of, like, and you did a cover shoot for, you did the first cover shoot for which Playboy?
I've been in Playboy 4 times.
You've been in Playboy, and you've been naked in Playboy.
Yeah, I've been naked in Playboy. I've done French Playboy twice, American Playboy twice.
So I think, like, the stereotype of that is you imagine some woman taking herself really seriously and how hot she is and all that, right? And you don't take your... I think that's part of it, isn't it?
I think the idea that I don't take myself seriously is completely correct. And it comes out in the photos, too, that I don't take any of this seriously. And I do take my work seriously.
Yeah. And you take their work seriously.
And I take their work seriously.
Partly your work, right?
Right, exactly. But I don't take the idea of sexuality and me being naked seriously.
Right. So you also said that you've never been, or you haven't had any problems with, being harassed, sexually harassed or anything. Did I read that, or have you, or what's your feeling about that?
I've always had this confidence and calmness, and, you know, a lot of the times, and the reasons why people find me a muse is because find me as their muse is right. because they see a lot of themselves in me. I reflect a lot of the things that people want to see in themselves. They project that upon me, and by doing that, they treat me in a way that they would want to treat that part of themselves. And they, yeah. And like I was telling you earlier, that a lot of the times when I'm in a group of people, you know, they'll say, like, for instance, like, you have red hair, they'll say, have you ever thought about dyeing your hair red? Because, like, they want me to look more like them because they see themselves in me. And that makes me really happy. And that also makes them, like, not want to mistreat me, because we become like this energy that just reflects each other, you know, in a way.
You know, it's kind of like what I imagine when you picture somebody trying to, you know, hold you up with a knife or a gun, and then you were like, hey, I'm, you know, you go like, well, listen, man, you know, let me give you like $5.
I would totally do that.
One time you had cops like try to take a show that you were in down, right? And you
exactly. And I walked them around.
It was a really big deal.
Yeah. So
it was in all the papers.
It was like 10 pages. It was all the full pages in the New York Post. And, you know, it's about like being discerning. Like somebody comes at you with, you know, the police came and they said, we want to shut down the show. All the neighbors are complaining because, you know, there was a 14-foot tall black and white photo of my naked torso in the window.
Hilarious.
And so, you know, I just walked them around the show. I flashed them. I introduced myself to them. And, you know, like, by the end of the show, they were huge fans.
So you showed them your tits?
Oh, I totally did. There's even photos of them online.
So how did they react to that? Did they laugh?
They thought it was funny. And because it is funny.
It's not even sexy, you
know? It's not sexy at all. But also, you know, I went around and I explained to them, like, what the work meant. And, you know, they really got it. And, you know, they got that it wasn't pornography. And mm-hmm.
You treated them with respect is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Like they're smart.
Exactly. Well, they are. Just because, you know, just because you and it's their job to protect the community.
Sure.
And they had to go check it out because they had a complaint. But also, let's say these people in the community who, you know, didn't like the show because of the nudity. Just because I disagree with someone doesn't mean that they're not right to them.
Yeah, right, right.
So, you know, I have my reasons for doing things. They have their reasons for doing things. And they're not wrong or evil just because they say they see the world in a different way that I do.
So what about women when you, I mean, you do, do you ever, like, this is something I don't personally understand because I was such a nerd and so dorky and not, you know.
Oh, in high school, I was made fun of and a nerd and dorky all the time. I was, yeah.
You know, but anyway, how do you feel about women? Like, are you ever like in a situation where like you're with other women who are trying to like use their sexuality or compete with you, or where you feel like there's a competitive vibe about sexuality? Like, how do you deal with that, or what's your take on that?
There are a few, not many, women who have this complete competitive spirit anytime that they're around me. In fact, there's one in particular who I've been told by an ex employee of theirs that used to just sit around and Google me and be mad that I existed at all. and it was really strange. But, you know, this ex-employee and I were at Art Basel together hanging out. And, you know, she said, I don't understand why this person doesn't like you this much. Because if they did, you know, want to spend time around you and didn't feel this immense competition with you, they would be here with us right now having a great time. And I agree. And, you know, this competitiveness isn't something that I create. It's completely in other people.
Right.
I'm a very accepting person. I'm a very joyful person. I, you know, invite lots of people around me, and I do not have an evil bone in my body. So whatever these feelings are not feelings that I create. They're created by someone else.
So fucking grounded. We got to find out about that. But before we do, I'm going to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, the best radio station on the planet.
Obviously.
Right?
Obviously.
You're here.
We're basking in our glory of how great we are right now.
Absolutely. But you know what's really great? You should download our apps. Do you know we have these free apps that you can download on your phone? And then if you have it on your phone, you can just listen to whatever's on the station. And there's like all at
night. I'm going to download now.
We have great music at night. We have like so many. You can really feel connected to like the whole planet. I swear to God, through this.
Try dancing naked in your apartment alone and see how great it feels.
See, there's great advice. And you can do that tonight with Tom Tenney's show, Frequency Theory, which is on 8 to 10 o'clock. He's the director of the station. So anyway, so go to radiofreebrooklyn.org and download / iPhone or / Android and download one of our apps and check in with us. So anyway, so you know what I was thinking?
Back to Natalie and Lisa.
Let's talk about like how you got to, like you have a very original take on life, I think. So I don't know anybody else who, you know, I don't know many people who just like pick up and go to New York at age 17.
Yeah, I know. There are people who tell me to describe myself to them. And I'm like, this is so complicated. I have no idea.
So what was it like where you grew up? What were your parents like?
So I grew up in a red wooden house. On the corner in Fairmont, West Virginia.
Is it like a poor, like I picture like this poor town with a main street. Is that like, was it a middle class town? Was it a poor town? What kind of town was it?
It's interesting because I don't know, but I can tell you that however the town was, like the richest person there was like the doctor. I think that we had one sit down restaurant on our side of town.
Did you have a movie theater?
No. So there's an east side of town and a west side of town. On our side of town, there was no movie theater. My house cost $20,000 for my parents to buy it. I walked to school every day. I was also poorer than people around me that I was told that were poor.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I was in this poor town in West Virginia, whether it was poor or not, I don't know. I've been told now that it would have been classified as that, but I was poorer than those people.
Wait, you never had to worry about food or clothes, right?
No, I never had to worry about food or clothes. There was lots of yard sales. So mm-hmm. I remember going shopping at lots of yard sales.
How about, like, did you ever want a particular brand of anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that wasn't available?
Yes,
was
completely.
Was that available to anybody in your town?
I remember when I was in elementary school, like, everyone had these Airwalks or Vans, mm-hmm. shoes. And I couldn't get those because they were too expensive, and I was made fun of for not having those. There was certain things that I didn't get, but you know, I was also made fun of as a kid. I was called weird, and you know, I'm really glad that happened because mm-hmm. if I had felt loved and accepted by like my peers in school, I might have still been there. And I wouldn't be here.
Interesting.
And so when I hear people talk about like anti-bullying campaigns, obviously I think that bullying is awful. But without bullying, I wouldn't have been pushed into this great life that I have right now.
Right. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And so like what I was made fun of as a kid for in West Virginia is completely celebrated here.
Did you always have a big personality?
I did, even though I probably shouldn't have.
Well, there's no should in that.
I've always had a big personality, even when I was growing up in West Virginia, I was not treated as someone who would normally have a big personality. Normally, people would be shy for the way that I was treated by people around me. But I've always had a big personality. I've always been very confident in what I can do. And I go out and, you know, do things that normal people would never even imagine doing, like walking 250 miles from New York to D.C., like actually believing that I could change the Constitution of the United States of America.
Mm.
And not only believing that I could do it, but like setting out a pathway for that to happen with, you know, many groups of other people.
So what kind of how did your parents deal with that? Were you by nature did not fit in just by the mere nature of who you are, right? So how did your parents deal with that? They were both Methodist teachers.
So my mother was on Sundays, they were both Free Methodist Sunday school teachers in church, and my mother was a hairdresser for a while and then did part-time dental assisting. My father's an epidemiologist. He, you know, had a government job, which is a very important government job.
What is that?
He's saving us from communicable diseases.
So is your father a scientist or a doctor? Or?
I'd call him a scientist.
Researcher?
Yeah. He makes sure that communicable diseases don't spread.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
super cool.
So he must be an educated guy, no?
Yeah, he has a master's degree. He worked a lot with the CDC, super intelligent.
I didn't know they had people like that. Were you in West Virginia?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But also, you know, my father and I, you know, we used to like drive around at night listening to music, and he would be like, tell me what this song is about. And, you know, like I would analyze the song. I think that that's probably what led me to like a lot of like self-analyzing, being able to understand other people and like what they're saying and doing.
But he also took you very seriously in that you knew what he made you the expert.
Right,
which
exactly.
Which you were, of course.
Right.
On music. So he he took you seriously.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, my parents, they worked a lot. So I had a lot of time alone, which allowed me to develop my own personality, mm-hmm. not based on anything else but me.
Right. And you said you had an older sister?
Yeah, I have an older sister. She's amazing. She also came from West Virginia. Elizabeth White. She's the cryptocurrency queen.
Wow.
Yeah, she's also a race car driver.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a daring family.
Yeah. In fact, she used to drive, like when we went to high school together, she used to borrow my grandmother's car to drive us to school every day. And she used to go 120 miles per hour every day on the highway to school, which you know, she blamed on me for being late every day. So you're welcome for jumpstarting your race car driving career.
So did your parents just kind of like, was their attitude kind of like they trusted you and they stayed out of your way? Or did they find out about any the driving?
I don't really know what went on with driving. I'm so shocked that my parents did not stop my sister driving 120 miles per hour to school every day. I did a really good job of covering up, you know, whatever I needed to do.
Were you a good student? Did you get good grades?
No. No, I didn't get good grades, but I got really high SAT scores, so high that they wanted to make me take it all over again.
Oh, like you were cheating.
Like they thought that I was cheating, and I was like, don't worry, I'm not going to any big university anywhere. Like, I'm not
That's
applying
hilarious.
Anywhere. So, you know, I just, like, I didn't get good grades because my teachers would send me home with like 50 problems to do, and I would be like, okay, here's three. I obviously did them correctly. Why are you making me do the other 47?
So you just didn't want to play by the rules.
No, and I obviously, you know, I thought that the rules were stupid, and I was an athlete, and I, you know.
You were good in sports. Did you excel at that?
Yeah, I was, you know, 1 year at the AAU competitions. I was the first place in the state for high jump.
Wow.
I always placed within the top five in the high jump and at my state level competitions, and I actually lettered in four varsity sports in high school.
Get out.
Yeah, cross country, soccer, basketball, and track. I was the best at track. You know, you have to, like, score so many points in track during a season to get a varsity letter. And my very first freshman meet, I scored enough to get a varsity letter for the entire season just in that one.
Wow. So you're a very talented athlete.
Yeah.
That must have given you confidence.
Yeah, completely. Well, it also gave me a way to, you know, get out a lot of the
your energy.
Anger. Inner anger.
Anger at the way everybody around you was narrow minded.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So did that help your parents sort of like think that you you know, think you were on the right track of not worrying about you because you had something that you were good at that you were applied. You must have applied yourself.
Yeah, I think so. I was also a naturally gifted athlete that worked extremely hard.
Yeah, obviously.
You know, it doesn't matter whether you're naturally gifted in athletics or not. If you don't
anything.
Or anything. If you don't go out there and work really hard.
Yes.
You know, I had people saying to me things like, oh, you know, if you were so lucky that you got like photographed by all of these artists and painted by all of these artists. It's like, well, you know, they also photographed and painted a lot of other people. I actually just worked hard and did something with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
But I don't think that there was a whole lot of luck in it, though. You know.
Well, that's what's so weird because, I mean, that must be a strange, or that's a complicated thing to deal with. Let's put it that way, because you have been the quote unquote muse. And I find that participant in a lot of work done by men. And I think a lot of that is probably because you can handle it.
Right. Yeah.
You know how to do it. You know how to do it. And also because I think your athleticism also helps and stuff like that. But I think that that makes me a little angry as a feminist because it feels a little bit, that's one of those things I was sort of thinking about, sexual currency, because people don't give you kind of maybe the credit that you should get if they don't see you as a three-dimensional person.
Right. They, and
Jerry Hall kind of like fucked with that, didn't she?
I love Jerry Hall. I think she's so cool.
She's so cool. I love that book she wrote.
Me too.
Oh my God. A really old book about how she traveled around the world, right?
Like yeah, really she's actually one of my closest friend's mothers. And she's she's very active in the feminist movement too, in the Equal Rights Amendment. She's amazing.
She's done a lot. Yeah. But there is something about that in this day and age that I think women don't get enough credit for, right?
Yeah, I do see it as women not getting enough credit, and I also see it as I don't care whether somebody gives me credit or not. I was there in the room when it happened. I know that the artists that I work with give me credit, the galleries that I work with give me credit, everybody who had anything to do with making any of the work that I've been a part of has given me credit vocally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And whether somebody who doesn't know me, who, you know, wants mm-hmm. to show up and look around and not give me credit, mm-hmm. I could really care less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's like putting, but it is, there is a putting of the female in a box, right?
Right. It's like people telling me that I'm like lucky that I got to work with all of these artists, that I was lucky and how great it was that they catapulted my art career. And it's ridiculous. And I don't take those people seriously who tell me things like that.
That seems really like where women don't get, that's just not good. That's not good.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we are evolving, but we have to also, you know, we have to accept the things we cannot change in a way, but yeah. change the things we can. Right. So if somebody, you know, I had somebody at Art Basel say this whole like lucky speech and I,
really?
Yeah.
And to your face?
To my face. And they don't even know that they're doing it while they're doing it. But I very firmly told them that they were incorrect and the reasons why. And I wasn't nice or polite about it. Because if I was nice and polite, they would keep on saying that to other people, that I'm lucky about all of these things. I'm like, no, I am not lucky. I made this for myself. I made this happen all by myself. And I went into detail about, in a very firm way. Like I said, I wasn't polite at all. Because they need to know the next time that they say this to anyone, to me, about me or about someone else, that they're wrong and that these are the repercussions of this, that they can have someone that they look up to not be polite to them.
Good for you. Thank you. That's a good service that you're doing for us. That's the other thing is that I think that, what was I going to say? I was going to say that was, wait, I lost my train of thought here. I knew this was going to happen, but I want to get it back. I'm getting it back.
Reel it in.
Give me a second. I was on vacation for too long. Well, it sounds like jealousy. That's what we know that.
Or it's just people not thinking that there's a person standing next to you. And there's also this idea that people can come up to me and tell me what they think of me based on, you know, maybe like New York Post articles or like stuff that they hear. And
well, what I was going to say also is that I think, you know, I think there's a certain currency and personality as well. Like I think sometimes my husband, I hope he's not listening to this. Oh, he probably is. Who knows? He hasn't divorced me yet. And so this can't do it. This probably won't do it. But I think like sometimes, for example, I think him and maybe other people, like I'm good at, you know, starting conversations, obviously. And I think, you know, sometimes he's envious of that.
Right.
Because I'm good at it. And I think there are other people probably. But having the ability to, I don't know, call it what you want, have socialization skills, mm-hmm. whatever, ability to socialize.
Social currency.
Social currency is just really...
Such a weird term.
I know. It's just really kind of just... It's really just, in a certain way, a lot parallel to sexual currency because it's a talent.
Right. Exactly.
And why... So, in other words, we're saying that maybe you have both, and because there's no way that you would have posed for this long of a list of diverse yet incredibly well-respected artists if you didn't... I think a lot of it is your personality. I think that's what we're saying.
It has to be. It couldn't be anything else because there are women out there that are much better looking than me. You know, we have supermodels out here that also would be, you know, willing to pose for Michael Dweck and Peter Beard and George Kondo and,
well,
you know?
You're in a pretty, like, you know, pretty competitive pool if you're just talking about looks. Yeah. So have you ever thought about acting or anything? Because you do have charisma, obviously.
Oh, thanks. I would love to act, in fact. The thing I think that's stopping me from acting is that if acting in a movie or whatever it is, if it turns out the way that you don't like it, you can't just rip it up and, like, not have it see the light of day because there's so many different, like, moving factors in it.
Well, yeah, I guess the problem with acting is that you're always beholden to somebody else's vision, pretty much.
Right.
Unless you wrote it, directed, and starred in it. But even then, you're still in trouble with trying to get the funding and getting the distribution. It's horrible, right?
Yeah, and, you know,
any of those things.
Like, so, for example, if I make a piece of artwork that I don't like, I can just tear it up. It'll never see the light of day. Even if I spend months making it, mm-hmm. I could at the end of the day, I could be like, okay, well, I don't like this. I'm going to tear it up, make sure nobody sees it. But with acting, you could spend a month doing something that, not because of you, because of an editor or a director, turns out to be complete crap, and then you just have to, like, go with it and go out and promote it anyway.
Yeah. No, yeah.
But,
or the script, you know, you could be in a play and the script could be awful.
Yeah,
or they
but
could, yeah,
I would do acting. Like, I would, like, do a movie with you. Let's
yeah.
do a movie.
Okay, let's do a movie.
A few friends of mine and I had some ideas for movies that we just haven't been able to have time to, like, bring out.
Oh, I know.
Have to have, like,
projects.
Time.
Yeah.
My gosh.
So I think that, like, okay, so let's get back to the social currency and manipulating men. So, like, let's use Melania Trump as an example because she's easy to see. It's easy to see. So she's using her sexual currency to be married to a rich guy, and he's an asshole. There's no way we think she likes him or what. What doesn't even matter. But she's obviously after the money, right?
Well, Donald Trump has an endearing factor, which is his money, and it's the single endearing factor that he has. So thank God he has it. It's not looks. It's not personality. If he's going to rely on anything, it has to be his money. And, you know, obviously.
Well, but what I'm saying is.
I mean, that's kind of a joke, but, you know, not really.
Yeah, no, I think women, let's just put it this way. I think women, a lot of times, not all women, but I'm talking about the issue of women using their sexuality to, like, I know a lot of women who want to date rich men. I mean, personally, I know a lot of people like that.
Oh, yeah, I know a lot of people like
that, too. And they want, you know, they don't really like the guy, maybe, but they want the, you know, the whatever comes along, the trips or whatever you get from that. I don't know.
Yeah, but they have to take the trips with the guy that they don't like,
right?
They're cool with that.
So I think that's really that's the kind of stuff that I think is hurting feminism or women's rights, is that women are actually manipulating men to get what they want. And I think that's the kind of thing that undercuts women, because how can you have respect for women if they are just using their sexuality, the most base part of them, you know, or the most common denominator part of themselves? I mean, there's a lot of great things you can do. I use my sexual currency with my husband sometimes, you know.
But yeah.
It's, but it's not a one-way street.
Right, exactly.
So I'm saying, like, I think that's the kind of thing that undercuts women's rights to some degree. Have you thought about that, or what do you think about that?
Well, I haven't really given much thought to that. I think that, you know, obviously there's a lot of women going after money in New York, and anytime I ever hear anybody talk about it, I always say, hey, there's really nice guys out there in all different, yeah, you know, socioeconomic, right, yeah, backgrounds.
Yeah.
And there's also massive assholes in all socioeconomic backgrounds, you know? So I just think that people should just, if you need money, then you should go out and make it.
Right.
And that's what I do. I go out and make money. Yes, I'm making money off of what I look like, off of my body, but I'm not stripping or prostituting myself.
Well, it's not manipulation. See,
right, exactly.
That's the part that bothers, that I'm unresolved. I mean, I don't want to be critical of it, because at the same time, I don't know what I'm talking about in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what I would do if I really needed money, or...
You would go out and make it.
Or...
Yes, like, I would go out and make it myself.
But also, like, a lot of it seems very ego-driven. It seems like the women want to know that they can get their egos... It satisfies their egos knowing that men will spend money on them.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Do you think that's true? I mean, do you see that? That's what I think I'm talking about.
I see a lot of men who use their power from wealth to get women, because that's the only thing that they can use to get women.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of women just lined up willing to accept that. But, you know, I don't think I really hang out with a lot of people like
that.
No,
but I think those women are undercutting the rest of us.
Oh, completely. Right? I think that women who are manipulating men to get money make all of us look bad. And then men,
okay,
and they make all of us look bad, because, you know, then men, they hear all of these horror, yes, stories from their friends about women who just want money. So they assume that we're all like that, and we're not all like that.
No, but it also gives, I think it's a really bad dynamic. And I think, like, when women, and like women who use their sexuality to manipulate at work, like they want a promotion or a raise, and like, they'll, you know, maybe undercut other women or try to manipulate a guy by flirting with him or getting jobs by flirting and all this stuff. Like, I think all that stuff, now people would say I'm jealous, but I also think at the same time, it's hurting women. It's not allowing women to be taken seriously.
Well, I think that there's also this dynamic where women think that they have to flirt to get a promotion. And and that's also oftentimes like set up by men in the office who, right, pay more attention, right, to women if they flirt with them. And I think that,
right,
you know, that was created by men, you know, with flirting with their secretaries and things like that. Like, they would probably like fire the ones who didn't. And, you know, there's a lot,
right,
of residual feeling about that around now. When we're taking like highly educated women who deserve to be promoted and forcing them to flirt with people to get promotions, I think that that's a big problem too.
I also think it's not discussed enough. I think men don't want to admit that they are being used by women for their money.
Right.
Because it undercuts their power or their sense, their ego.
Right. And there's a lot of wealthy men that are great men that, you know, don't have to, you know, use,
yeah,
their.
I'm not talking about all sexy women, right, and all rich men. I'm just saying, like, this dynamic is very prevalent in our society. And I think it's undercutting feminism more than, and I hate that word feminism, whatever, women's rights more than. I think it's kind of like a silent, you know, a silent, I don't want to say killer, but, you know, a silent problem.
Yeah, I think if you allow yourself to be bought, you'll be an object. You know, objects can be bought.
Well, it allows people to say, oh, they didn't get ahead. Like what you were saying about getting those jobs. Like right. people are assuming that, you know, you did something manipulative with your about right. your sexuality to get right. the job. And you didn't. I don't believe. I mean, I understand why you got the jobs. I know the I know some of these people.
Right. Exactly.
So I know why you got the jobs.
And I was not, they're not sleeping people with
that,
them.
No. And you, no. they're not people that are going to. You know, like, I think, you know, you're one of the few women I know that Spencer has actually asked to pose that he knows personally. Usually it's right. people from one place or another.
Right. And, you know, maybe in the beginning of my career, I got people asking me, well, did you sleep with that artist? Is that why you got the job? And people don't ask me that anymore. But, you know, I found that like really weird that people would just assume that artists went around giving people jobs just because they slept with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember this one photographer, I won't say his name, but he sleeps with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I was, and you know, I there was this magazine that he photographed me in, and somebody asked me, you know, did you sleep with that person? And I said, no. If they put every single person that they slept with in this magazine, it would be like an industrial doorstopper. It would be way like 50 pounds. Oh, my God. Can you imagine every...
And people get reputations. It must be pressure on everybody in that business, because if you have a reputation for sleeping with, being the photographer sleeping with women, you have to, then you probably feel like you have to sleep with them. And then if you're the woman, like you probably have a reputation, eh, she's not going to sleep with you. So people like that.
Yeah.
You know, people like that, or they, you know, that like in, you know, probably. I mean, you know,
especially for like I'm with Michael Dweck, like I'm great friends with his wife. Right. I respect her, and she, right. you know, feels the same way about me. So right. would she want her husband to be, you know, going off to photo shoots to a woman who has a bad reputation? No. Are you kidding?
So we have 3 minutes. We're going to have to wrap this up. I want people to know that they should go to your website. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, if you want to go to my website, it's nataliewhiteforequalrights.org. It hasn't been updated lately, but you can just...
Neither is mine.
It's okay.
I hear you.
If you want to find out more about the Equal Rights Amendment, go to equalmeansequal.org.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And do you have any like words of advice for young women, being a young woman yourself?
Yeah. Let's see. Words of advice for young women
about how they should demand, you know, how to be treated well by men or
anything. Yeah, don't be told how to feel. don't be told how to think. Think inside your own box. Don't think inside other people's. When people say think outside the box, what they really mean is think inside my box.
Huh.
Do not. And your box is your head. So think for yourself. Don't, you know, listen to all of the options and then come up with your own analysis based on.
That's really good advice. I'm gonna take that. Do you still exercise a lot? Are you into sports?
I do like interval training, and I do a lot of walking. I walk to a lot of places.
I love walking.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Wow. You're awesome.
You're awesome.
No.
No, you are.
You know, guys, if you missed any of this, you can listen to it tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. 8 to 9 a.m. right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can follow me, Dr. Lisa. It's at Dr. Lisa Levy, SP, stands for self-proclaimed psychotherapist. Don't forget to go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org, donate some money. And you should also stick around. This is very important. We have great programming coming up today. We have, right after this, Lost and Rewound with Ellen Danziger. We've got, we had Tom Tenney. I told you about that. We've got Brooklyn Bandstand 4 to 5 with Rob Pritchard. And what else have we got? We've also got my good friend Ben Lewis today. Ben talks. Ben's super popular. He's awesome. He is funny, and he's got the greatest group of people.